Come on in, fellas. Come on in. Welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday night call. Let me just make a few adjustments here. Let's pin my face. There I am. Nice to see everyone. Happy summertime. It's the month of June. So hopefully it's good weather, good vibes for wherever you are signing in from. I can tell you in Canada, we've had a slow start to summer this year. But the last few days, as you can see, I got a little color into my face. It's turning into summer, so it's quite nice. It's quite nice. So let's start off the call like we do every month with some wins on our own training. No vids, no problem, TK. But we can talk. So let's talk about some wins, some training wins, maybe in the last week, maybe in the last month. It's the last month I was on this call here. So if you want to unmute yourself, let's go one by one. It's a small group. Let's hear some training wins or life wins we have. So John, why don't you start us off?
Did you see me?
Oh, I did.
Okay. Well, training's going well. I've graduated to bench presses and squats this week. And I added in, Greg sent me a message this morning to film the deadlift, so I added that to the workout today too.
Perfect. Okay, so getting some bigger barbell lifts. I'm glad that you graduated. What was the criteria for you to graduate to those lifts?
Well, I had the left shoulder rotator cuff surgery. So getting to the point where I felt like I was balanced enough to be able to do two sides at once and have the right shoulder range for the back squat.
Fair. I mean that the barbell doesn't care if you're symmetrical or not. You have to conform to it, or there'll be a compensation. So I'm glad that you're able to now get equal from side to side. It's good. Jeff, you want to share some of your training wins, your fitness wins, your health wins?
Which Jeff are you talking to?
Let's go Hoffman. He's the next one on my list. You know what? You know Jeff with a G. You're already there. Why not just take it away?
Huh. Yeah. So I've been focusing on primarily gut health, and I've been on a pretty intense supplement protocol. So I feel like that's kept me a bit low energy. I've also been in a pretty significant deficit. But I went in today to film a rep of deadlift. I haven't deadlifted in months, and I actually felt really strong and solid on it. So I was happy about that.
That's good. That's good to hear. Thanks for sharing. Jeff with a J, Hoffman.
Sure. So I think win for this week. Little bit of travel, call, and some other things that kind of knocked the schedule a little bit left and right, and still able to get through those workouts, and then the kind of the packing plan of like powders and stuff like that stuffed into my bag, and then just when we got where we got, kind of some makeshift easier makeshift meal plans to kind of hit some of those targets seem to work pretty well. So able to enjoy time away from work, but also still kind of stay on track. So.
That's good. I'm glad you're able to do that. Traveling is always tough for a lot of us. We always default to what's around us and what's available. And unfortunately, the environments these days are not always conclusive to our training goals. So being prepared in advance and grabbing a few extra things, thinking outside the box, can allow you to stay on track for your training goals. So I'm glad you got that. Cool. Seth, we're just going over some weekly wins or monthly wins because I only do these calls once a month. Why don't you chime in? How's your training going? How's your life going?
Yeah, thanks. Happy to be here. Good to see you guys. Training's good. Started a new program Monday, and I think Greg tries to kill me, but it's all good. Tweaked my shoulder a little bit this morning doing dips. They're always a challenge, and I'd say biggest win for me is maintaining weight over the last couple of weeks. still this week as well, hovering right around where I wanted to be, around 190, 192, 193. So, being able to do that with kids starting to be home from school and junk food and crap all over the place, is a good thing.
Yeah, kids are terrible. If you don't have kids, you're on the call. Think twice. I feel you,
Or
sir.
I got one or two if you want. I can
No,
I
I
actually will
got
pay.
two if you want one as well. Kidding. Kids are good most of the time. Some of the time. Not all the time. Sometimes. Cool. Would anyone else like to share some of their wins in their health or their training?
Yeah, definitely me. So obviously, like we've been on it this last week, you putting me on the spot with sleep. Sleep has been a big difference. So my average has gone from like 6 to 6.5 to like 7+. And just that 1 hour of difference has made a big difference. You know, just waking up, feeling more rested, ready to go, hit the gym in the morning, just feel more balanced and energy-wise even throughout the day. So just adding just that 1 hour to me has helped a lot. So I'm going to try to just stay on that.
When we talked in the beginning, you said your sleep was fine, right? So you thought that you felt normal. You thought that you felt fine, right? We've only had 30 to 60 minutes a night.
And I it, so I it's funny because I've been doing it for so long, I actually forget what actually better sleep feels like. So I've been so used to the same pattern. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
And that's very common. That's why I like things like wearables. Because a lot of times it doesn't bring, or sorry, what they do is they bring things to light that you weren't aware of.
Yeah.
And I'm as guilty as anyone else. For years, I was always, my sleep's fine. But once I started measuring it, I was like, oh, according to this, it's not fine. Maybe I'll prioritize it, I'll do some things, and I'll see if I can get the numbers to say it's fine. And at the same time, I then felt better, performed better, and now it's like, okay, I've missed the opportunity many years ago, but I'm glad that I'm on it now at this age than waiting another 10 years later to get onto my sleep. So,
Exactly. Even the HRV, even just the little consistent uptick just in the HRV itself. So obviously with tracking with my Garmin and stuff, just seeing that overall, the deep, the REM and the HRV makes it's been making a difference for sure.
hey Elias, what'd you do? What'd you do differently this week?
Definitely just put myself on a night routine. So essentially I would just stay up reading and researching things, either like work or personal self-improvement, that sort of thing. And I would stay up to like 11, 11:30. So Chris kind of put me on the ball. It's like every morning, text me, let me know that you sleep, you know, that I slept. Check in with him every morning when I wake up that I slept my 7+ or better hours and stuff. And that's he put me on the spot. I was looking, it's like, oh shit, it's 10:15. I gotta go to sleep. So I just do my routine, just cut an hour into it, and it was as simple as that. So,
Nice.
yeah.
Something's got to go. If you are a night owl and you like to stay up late and do things, something's got to go. You got to reduce something, remove something. And a lot of times people think it's the stuff they don't want to give up. Like, I don't want to give up that. That's my only time I get to do that. However, if you do an 18-hour audit on yourself, there's a lot of free time in the day for the average person where they might be able to get move stuff around. Then they can go to bed a little bit earlier because they did earlier in the day. I'm a big fan of setting alarms, not just for waking up, but for going to bed. So it's an alarm you can put at night, every night, whatever, 9:45. That's your, oh, the alarm just went off. I've got 15 minutes to get myself together because I need to go to bed by 10. So alarms are great for that as well, not just to wake up, but also start your nighttime routine. So if you're on this call now and you're thinking about going to bed a little bit earlier, maybe try using a nighttime alarm or text your coach every day. Let them know what time you're going to bed. TK, I see you're talking about some leg press and some hack squat game going well this week. Okay, that's good to hear. So next time I see you, I expect 36-inch legs. That's what I want to see on you, buddy. Okay, everyone else only. Okay, you set the bar. All right, so we're going to talk about deadlifting today. We have a pretty cool title, Resilience to Deadlifting, Removing Pain, something along those lines. But I thought it would be much better to actually just use this hour to go over a bunch of deadlifts. And I'll give you my coach's eye on the lifts of how we can make the lift better. What's good, what's not so good, what I would change. Now, from a caveat perspective, I look at a lot of deadlifts with my live one-on-one coaching. I coach a lot of lifters, power lifters. I coach a lot of aesthetics people as well. I coach a lot of older people who just want to get strong, and I coach young people who want to get strong for their sports. So the deadlift is something that I've seen many times. So my eye will be different than someone else's, but I'm going to bring to light what I see and in my experience, what I would do different, what I would change, and so forth. So for the guys who sent in the some of the deadlift videos on WhatsApp, I appreciate that. So let's just go through them here and have a look from video to video. Do-do-do. So I'm just going to share my screen with everyone. And we're going to start right at the top in the videos that came in. What I'll do, try to minimize this. We're going to maximize that. Okay. So I can't see everyone. I can see the video. Someone could unmute themselves. Can we see this video well? Is this good video footage for everyone?
Yep.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, perfect. So when I look at deadlift videos, the very first thing that I look at is the setup. The setup is really important in deadlifting because if you're set right, you usually finish right. If you're not set up well to begin, there's going to be a side effect, a negative side effect, a consequence somewhere, and an adjustment the body needs to make. So when someone goes to deadlift, the first thing I do is I say, what's the setup look like? The second thing I look at is the purpose of the deadlift. Why are we deadlifting? What do we want to get out of deadlifting? Do we want to put on muscle, or do we want to get really strong? Or do we want to put on muscle and get strong? And I think for the majority of us here, we want to put on muscle and get strong. So I'm going to come at it with that specific lens of how do we get stronger and put on muscle at the same time. A conventional deadlift is a great exercise to do both because it is a bilateral exercise, which means you use two legs and two arms at the same time. It's on a barbell. Anytime you do two arms, two legs on a barbell, you can exert or move a lot of force, a lot of weight. Because you can move a lot of weight, that weight is considered load. That loads the skeleton. The adaptation is the skeleton gets stronger. It gets stronger by connective tissues, cartilage, ligaments. It gets connective, it gets stronger by bone. Mineral density goes up. And it gets stronger by stressing muscles, and they adapt by getting bigger and more output can be driven. So the deadlift is great for that. It just kind of offers all these things here. So when we look at this deadlift video, I'm going to look at the setup. The first thing that I notice is I go from a bottoms up approach, is I notice the feet. And I'm looking at these feet. And when I see a swoosh, a Nike shoe. I then look at underneath the shoe. What is underneath the shoe? And I see this squishy material. This squishy material absorbs the weight. Now I'll stop sharing for a second. If the weight of the individual goes more towards their toes and you're in a squishy shoe, it's going to pull you forward. If someone's got a squishy foot, and they lift their toes, and the weight's more in line with the midpoint of the body, it's going to pull you backwards. It's just what happens when you apply force through a squishy sole of a sneaker. So, depending on the shoe, I always recommend wearing thin or nothing. That just eliminates the possibility of going a bit on the toe or going a bit on the heel. If I go and elevate my heel, such as if I'm wearing like a squat shoe, it's a hard, use fiberglass heels or wooden heels, then there is no absorption going backwards, but now my center of mass is slightly forward a bit more. The conventional deadlift is hard on the body because the weight is in front of your center of mass. That's important because you can't lift the maximum amount of weight when the weight is in front of you. So we go back to the video here. The barbell is in front of us. I need to get that bar as close to my body as possible. If I have a shoe with a bit of an elevation on the back, it's going to tilt my body slightly forward, and it's going to make my center of mass more forward. When I want the barbell as close to my body as possible, to get as close to my center of mass. So the shoe is not a great shoe to use in deadlifting. If we're deadlifting for aesthetics to put on muscle, it's not the end of the world. But if we were going to test a max lift, or you want to lift your max set of five, I would say kick the shoes off, go sock feet, or wear something much flatter. So the footwear is the first thing that comes to mind on this lift here. Let's take a look at it in real time speed, and then I'll break down some of the stuff that I see. So real time speed. Okay, 5 reps. So, of those 5 reps, are we all generally happy with what we see? When you look at that, he's hip, that's pretty good 5 reps. Or is there anything that anyone sees where they say, hey, I noticed this on the deadlift?
I see my leg movement. It was not as I wasn't hinging as much as my legs on the lower part than I was on the top. The top looked okay, but it was my lower legs, my waist down.
Okay, so the waist down. So you say hinging.
Yeah.
Do you just mean you're not using your legs as much?
Yeah. Typically, I would
Okay.
see myself kind of going deeper in my prior videos that I've done in the past. So
Yeah.
that's what I'm kind of seeing.
Just to be to clarify, lower body on the deadlift. What he's saying is this is a hinge. A hinge is a bend exercise. Just bending over at the waist, that's considered a hinge. So an RDL is a hinge. A deadlift is a variation of a hinge, but to do a full deadlift, we gotta then bend at the knees. So you're saying you're not bending at the knees as much,
That's
right?
right. Yes, that's right.
You're good. Because the hinge was great. The hinge part was really good.
Yeah.
But you're saying you're not bending knees. Let's take a look at that together.
Yeah.
Watch that again. So go back to the start of the lift. So everyone just kind of watch the height of the hips and the bend of the knee. Height of the hips and bend of the knee. So they're both bent. Rep number one, hinge, bends knees. Rep number two, hinge, ooh, less. So look at where the plates are touching. Look at the height of the hip compared to the bend of the knee. It's higher. So if the hip is higher on this rep here, what that's saying is the knee isn't bending as much. See? Here's the start of rep one. The hips are slightly lower. The hips are lower because the knee is bent more. If the knee is bent more, the quadriceps are assisting in the lift. You're bang on with this observation of your own lift. You're using your legs less as the reps go on. So as the reps go on and we're using the legs less, what muscles do you think are going to have to pick up the slack and do a little bit more?
Oh, probably the back legs to the hamstrings, glutes.
More hamstring, more glute, more erectors, more back. Especially on the as the reps go on, like
Yeah.
look, you're almost standing up, your knees are almost straight.
I know.
So is this on this one? You're not a bad person, by the way. You're a very nice man. You're a good guy. Not good pets, but I mean that's what that this is a very common thing that happens when we get tired. The deadlift is a great exercise, but it's one of those higher risk ones. If you want to deadlift the most weight possible, you want to use the most muscle mass possible. When it's all your muscles. If you want to deadlift and prioritize using your glutes and your hamstrings, you don't do a deadlift to the floor. You do a Romanian deadlift. So if in your training program, one of your goals was, I want to develop the booty because it's Speedo season, I would program a shit ton of just this, RDLs. RDLs, because it takes the quadriceps out. The quadriceps do nothing on an RDL. But if we're using the deadlift to train the entire body, to move more weight, to stress the entire skeleton, to build more muscle, we want to be using those legs as well. So bang on with that idea that you used your legs less as you went on, and your body started using more erectors, hamstrings, and glutes. So that's going to limit how much weight you can lift over time. And what's going to gas out first is going to be them hammies and glutes. But do you know who's got the most endurance on the backside of the body? It's not the glutes, they're power muscles. They contract, contract, and then they go to bed. Hamstrings, same thing. They're explosive, contract, contract, then they go to bed. The highest amount of high fatigue muscles to resistance in the body are going to be found in your erector muscles, your back muscles, not your low back, because they run from your tailbone right up to the back of the skull. You got three on each side of the spine. They're designed for endurance. Women have more endurance in those muscles than men do. Any guesses why?
Boobs.
Someone once told me it was for 9 months of holding a baby and so forth, and then the next 9 months afterwards. But you know what? You're right. I think the boobs is the real reason. Nature gave them those to handle the coconuts. But yeah, so on average, women tend to have more slow twitch muscle fibers found in the erectors than men. So we've got more endurance there than we do in the glutes and the hamstrings. So we will utilize them as we get more tired. People who have bad backs, when it comes to deadlifting, they also tend to actually have strong backs. But deadlift messes up their backs. The reason being is the demand of the weight that they're lifting usually exceeds the capacity of the back. When the back muscles get tired, and they can no longer do the majority of that move in a hinge. So we start using our legs. Then we just use mostly our erectors. When the erectors tend to get tired, they can't hold the extension of the back. If they can't hold the extension of the back goes into flexion. So what I noticed on the deadlift was that you stay in extension the whole time. So what I mean by extension is the top position of the deadlift. Gotta share. Well, I just want you to watch his upper body. See how the chest is really kind of pushed out. The rib is high at the top of each lift. So we're actually contracting your erectors a lot at the top. So what's happening is we're not using our quadriceps very much. We're using our glutes and our hams. And then to finish the lift, we're using the majority of our erectors. There's no bum used at this point of the lift. No glute. So he's wearing a shirt, but what I can see happening is the deadlift is looking like this. So everyone see how much I'm arching my back at the top. I'm pulling all my shit back. What should happen at the top of the lift to get tension away from the erectors is the hips come underneath you, and we just stand straight, not arch and pull back. So spines don't like finishing lifts like this. They like finishing like this and like this. So I use my lats to finish my lift where I pull them here. I don't pull my shoulder blades back. I don't do this motion. If I want to work my rhomboids, what do I do? I do seated rows, I do bent over rows, I do variations of pulls that way. So we don't hyperextend at the top of the lift. Some people will say, like, I don't like deadlifting because it hurts when I lock out. I do this motion here and I feel it in my low back. That's because they're hyperextending at the low back. So the way we would correct that deadlift is we would go over those points and I would say, use your legs more. And that worked over time. I remember you're like, oh, yeah, then you were aware to use your legs more. And then the only difference is you squeeze your bum at the top and you don't just pull with your back muscles. Does that make sense to everyone? Does everyone see what I'm talking about? Okay. Now, there was other things in that deadlift, but I want to look at a few other deadlifts because we see some of the same things in other deadlifts. I'm going to bring some of those up. So let's go back to the screen. Let's close all of that there. That was good. That was good. What was side view? Back to side view here. Yes. Okay, John's on the call. So we all can see this video. So when analyzing the deadlift, remember we always start by looking at the shoes and the footwear. Let me make this bigger for all of us. Move that out of the way. So here's a setup position. We're going to look at those shoes. Okay, so this is not a doesn't look like a super squishy insole of the shoe, but again, I would just say let's put on the socks in this one here. But I can't do a super zoom here, so I'm not sure. But I'd probably just say go to socks or a flatter shoe in this one. So then we look at the setup, the starting position. The starting position here, what I always want to see on everyone is a flat back. So when we grab the bar, the back needs to be flat. Now, what's considered flat? Flat means not round. Why is round bad? Well, when the spine rounds and you have a load in front of you, it creates what's considered a shear force. A shear force is pulling in two separate directions horizontally. So you can see the arrow here. There's going to get a pull on one side, then a pull on the other side. And who's in the middle of the tug of war tends to be the vertebrae of the back, but they're now in a flexed position. Stop sharing again. Anytime people tend to hurt their backs and they get they've heard of a slip disc or a bulge disc, it's always usually L4, L5, S1 in that area, because that is the area of the low back that's the furthest away from the weight. And when you're getting a load going this way, vertical load, which is the weight you're lifting going like that, and because it's in front of you, it's pulling in one direction, and you're trying to pull in the opposite direction. That measurement of force between is called a shear force. So shear forces happen all the time in life. They happen in our knees when we go up and down stairs. They happen in deadlifting. However, when they get amplified beyond the capacity of the person, that's when we tweak the back. So how do you amplify it? If you take the spine and you put it into spinal flexion like this. So here's my low back. Oh, my sweater. So my low back flexed, hyperextended, neutral, flexed, hyperextended, neutral. Where are we safest with lifting? Neutral. Where do we run into trouble? Flexed. So when we set up for the deadlift, it shouldn't be flexed, shouldn't be hyperextended. But there's a way to tell if you're in the sweet spot. To tell if you're in the sweet spot, what I always look for is ripples in the shirt, but not the hyperextended bent stick. So the bent stick analogy would be like if you took a stick and you just kept bending it and bending it and bending it, where you can see the middle point is really bent and it's about to snap, that would be too much. That'd be a hyperextended back. So when we look at John here, he's not in hyperextension. He's got ripples in the shirt. We'd call this a flat back position. So setup position, he's good. I like this. Side view, I'm always going to be looking at that low back and make sure that we're in a good neutral position to start. So as the lift goes on, I'm looking at the position of the bar now. Where's the bar making contact with his body? What I'm noticing is I want that bar in contact with his thighs sooner. He's making contact with his thighs at the top of the lift where his knees lock out, but his upper body is still forward. So from a technique perspective, I want his upper body back more before his knees lock out. Because what's happening is the bar is in front of his body. Now you can't see that last rep was really obvious. What I want everyone to look at is look at the bar and then see that it stays away from his body until it gets to the top of his hips. I can't slow-mo this. So everyone, you see it's not touching his thighs until it gets to the top. So why is that a problem? He lifted the weight. John, you probably were like, hey, it was a good lift. I felt fine afterwards. No big deal. And you're probably right. There's no big deal. The load on there didn't exceed your capacity that could lead to a tweak. However, your maximal ability to lift weight will always be compromised because the bar is further away from you. The shear force that happens when you round your back is because the pull's in one position and the spine rounds out. The shear happens anyway because there's a load in front of your body. The further the load is in front of your body, the greater the shear. So if your back is round and the bar is in front of you, that's a big no-no. If the back is not round and the bar is in front of you, you're always just going to have a lower ceiling of how much weight you could lift. If you kept that bar closer to your body, you'd be able to lift more weight. So now we're talking performance. So I'll show you an example, and this kind of came to light. So I made a video about it on my social media just the other day. And so we're gonna pop out of here of John. I'm gonna go right up. Okay, so I want everyone to watch this video here. This is, and I'll just play it out, and you can listen to the audio as well.
You're deadlifting. I'm standing to the side of her. From the side of her, I can't see what I need to see. The bar is not making contact with her thighs on a conventional pull. What's the fix? 45-degree oblique angle from the back. I can now see the bar is making contact with her thighs. This is going to make the exercise a lot easier for her. Side view, I don't see this. I can go slightly behind her, or I can go slightly in front of her. And again, I can see that bar making contact with her thighs. Great coaches know the great angle.
So you see, we all see how the bar is touching her thighs from the knee up, right? The reason why it's touching the thighs on the way up is she's pulling the bar into her body with her arms. So you want that bar to kiss the skin the entire way through. It's closer to you. So on this video here, it's away from her body. There's space. So my coach's eye saw that as soon as she pulled it up. So I was like, oh, that's obvious. It's not touching. Same with John's. I could pause it. Can't really rewind. But here you can see once it gets above the knee, it's going into her thighs. So she's keeping that bar close to her body. When I go to the front view, you can see it the most. So on the front, and I coached her. We had the video where she was doing it bad and then the video where she's doing it right. So you see it's in contact with her thighs the entire time. So when we do deadlifting, like on John's lift, the major change I would say, John, is pull that bar, drag that bar into your body. So the way we do that is we use the arms, and as we're pulling, when we get to here, my arms should be going in this direction. So these lat muscles, that's what they do. So it drags into my thighs. What I can do to amplify that is I can squeeze my arse. So when the bar gets to here, I aggressively squeeze my arse and pull. And that has me finish like this. That way I can't hyperextend my back as much. So now it's a protective way to lift. It's better for my back. And the bar stays closer to my body. Does everyone see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I have a question on the bent back portion. Because I've heard, and I've from experience doing it with the low back straight, but the upper back slightly flexed. Do you have issues with the upper back flexing at the start of the movement?
There's a degree, there's a variation, there's an amount that you can do. Now, in my experience, I've never worked with anyone, and I've never heard of anyone who had a thoracic spinal acute injury from deadlifting. I've never heard of it. Not saying it hasn't happened, but I've just never heard of it. I've coached people to actually go into a more kyphotic upper back position for performance. So the upper back muscles, they're pretty strong at holding load. They're much stronger than the lower back muscles. Multiple reasons. Your thoracic spine and the lower parts of the thoracic spine, T10, T11, I don't know. Jeff, you probably know this, but there's connective points to the diaphragm. So when we take in a big belly breath and we brace and we push our abdomen outward, that increases intra-abdominal pressure and intrathoracic pressure. So we get more pressure up in this area here. That pressure stabilizes that part of the oh, stable. It's not going to snap. The diaphragm doesn't connect to L4, L5, S1, I believe, or S2. So what happens is we try to create all this pressure with our diaphragm being full, but we don't have the protection in that area of the back. So it's been shown that over time, not usually one rep, but over time, continuous spinal flexion under heavy load leads to issues at L4, L5, S1, but not in the thoracic spine or low cervical. So in my experience, I've also seen, or I've coached people that when they go to deadlift, I say, make your arms as long as you can. So to do that, we reach down. We reach down. When I reach down, my arms are longer. It looks like my upper back is a bit round. My low back, if it continues to round, is a problem. My low back stays neutral, but my upper back is round. I tend to be totally fine. And like I've said before, I've never heard of anyone in the upper back. Now, it's a performance enhancer because now your arms are longer. So you don't have to actually move the bar as great of a distance. So again, in my experience, thoracic has never been an issue for anyone deadlifting. I've never heard in the sport of powerlifting, doesn't mean it cannot happen, but anytime someone hurts their back, I always, without them even saying, I'm like, L4, L5, S1. They're like, yeah, how'd you know? It's just the common area because of where the load is. Now, does anyone hear of any, or Jeff, have you heard anything else, or anyone else on the call here have heard anything else with thoracic?
No, I just personally flex thoracic a decent amount deadlifting, and it feels stronger for me.
Yeah. Now, if you retracted your scapula, so if you tried to do all your deadlifting like this, look what happens at my arms. They're shorter. So now my arm length, I now need to move that load an extra few inches. So when people bend down to grab the bar and they pull their shoulder blades back first, do you know what happens when they lift the bar? They have to move it a greater distance, and the load always pulls them out of retraction down into that position anyway. Because your belly, like if you think about it, could you take 300 pounds from the floor, hold it like that, and keep it like that? No, the upper back would start to go anyway. So I always say put it in that position first. And then when you reach down and you activate and tense your lats, you now protect your mid back and your upper back. There's so much tension in there, nothing's going to snap. It's when we're relaxed, we tend to get into more trouble. Jeff Hoffman, do you have any insight on this with some of your lifting? And then also, I know you've seen some stuff maybe in the OR. I don't know if you've seen the upper body stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a spine subspecialist or anything like that, but I would say very rare to never seen thoracic pathology, but plenty of guys with lower lumbar issues. So
Okay, there we go. The meathead and the doctor. Okay, together we agree. That's good. Awesome. Okay, so any other questions regarding that or on the last video? That was a good question, Jeff. Thanks for asking. Just going to go into the chat here. The CrossFit tank. Who's the CrossFit tank?
that's John, I think, before his rotator cuff. I think there was a bit of CrossFit Games action there, and I remember from some of the chats.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Was a quarter finalist in my age group. I think I ended up like 243rd in the world before the surgery.
That's a pretty good title, my friend. Now, the CrossFit deadlift is a different performance deadlift. In the sport of CrossFit, a lot of times you get into a WOD, and sure, you've been there before, John. It's reps. Here's the load. You got to do the reps, and you got to go to the next part, and the next part, and the next part here. So I didn't talk about this yet, about how do we do consistent reps in a row. So let's take a look at some other lifts to get rid of the so many screens. For this. And there. Okay, let's go to Jeff's. We're going to full screen this. So this is a different view. This is the front view. So I like me the front view. Because the front view shows me something different. The side view always shows me the back position. And I would prioritize back position first, always, because the area of risk is highest in the lumbar spine. In the front view, I can't see the lumbar spine. So as a coach, I would be like, hey, listen, send me some videos of your deadlift side view. Once I see the side view is good, I'd be like, okay, cool. Now I want to see the front view. So let's assume the side view is good. And now we'll go into the front view here. So we look at our setup position. What do we notice about the shoes?
Visible.
There's no shoes. Perfect, right? Awesome. So we've got the right footwear. We got minimalist at best. So the footwear is great. I'm happy with that. Now we go down to the bar. We're just going to watch for some real-time speed. And we got one rep to work with, one whole rep to work with. So let me see how I would make this exercise from good to great. So we go to the setup. The objective here is to move the most weight possible using the least amount of energy. So we're going to use it from a strength perspective here. What we want to do is we want to have our body as tall as can be before we lift. The more bent over we are, the greater distance we have to move the bar. So if everyone could visualize this, if Jeff's hands were outside the ring, his right hand was over here, his left hand was over here. What would that do to his spine position? Would it make it more upright or bent over more? Which one?
We'd have to bend down closer to the bar to spread his hands.
Yeah, he'd have to go to the snatch grip and bend over more. So if he's bent over more, his hip position is closed. The more a joint is closed, the more energy it's required to open it. The more a joint is closed, the more energy is required to open it. The best example of that always will be this, the squat. If my squat is joint open, I can move a lot of weight like this doing partials. But if I've got to close my joints and come back up, I can't move as much weight. So what we want to do is we want the joints to be as open as possible for what our body allows us to do. So what I would do with Jeff, I would open his joints more. So how are we going to open the joints more? I would take your stance, Jeff, and I would narrow it. I would make your stance closer together. So let's see where you. So where your stance is right now, you have to move your arms out of the way of your legs to grab the bar because your legs are in the way. So if you go down to grab the bar, you can see there's a bend in the elbow on both sides because they got to go around the knees. The arms on a deadlift, conventional deadlift, should be as vertical as possible. They should be straight down. The only way we get them straight down is we get them knees out of the way. So if we bring our feet closer together by about probably 1.5, 2 inches per side, the arms can go straight down to the shoulders or from the shoulders straight down. So the width that someone should set their hands when they deadlift for everybody to be the most efficient is always going to be straight down from the shoulders. So this is the width of my shoulders. My arms should be like this when I deadlift. What's happening with Jeff is Jeff's legs are wider, so he has to go outside to grab the bar. But if Jeff's legs come in, his arms come in, he's a bit more upright. So the hip angle, instead of like this, legs come in. The hip angle opens up more. If it's opened up more, it takes less energy to finish the lift versus being closed. So for Jeff, narrow your stance, have your arms go straight down. How does that sound?
Right. Looking forward to trying it.
Perfect. Perfect. I like that. I like greats. So front view always shows that. Got side. Look at this one here. Seth. Oh, Seth is here. Great one. Look at you, Seth. Seth, you did this today?
Yep, early morning.
We did. And you did an RDL.
Yeah.
And we're going to move this to there. Okay, we're going to go to the setup. So the RDL. Were you programmed RDLs or do you not do deadlifts from the floor?
I have not done deadlifts from the floor, but I am programmed RDLs.
Okay. No problem if you're not doing deadlifts from the floor. Sometimes the juice ain't worth the squeeze. So if we're going to do an RDL and we want to get the benefits for the glutes, the hamstrings, and some of the back, when we look at the footwear, the center of pressure and the squishiness of the foot doesn't matter as much when the range of motion is less. It matters more when you're going from the floor. So you can do your RDLs in this thing here because your weight's going to shift a little bit forward, a little bit backwards anyway. It's not a problem with an RDL. Now, if you're doing an RDL and you're picking it up from the rack, taking two steps out, and you're using a load you can control, no problem. If someone's deadlifting max weight from the floor, but they're picking it up from the rack and they're walking it out, I got a big problem with that. The reason why I got the big problem with that is the tension is never really the same when you pick a bar up off a rack and you walk side to side and then you do your lift compared to if you pick it up from a dead stop position in the bottom. Because you create your tension at the top, go down, grab the bar, and then stand up. So in my experience, guys who lift from the rack really heavy and they kind of walk backwards, if they're not really good at creating internal pressure, handling that load, and they're twisting side to side, they've usually come back and said, I feel like this twinge is in my low back. There's a caveat on that. Coach Steve, who can deadlift a house, he does his deadlifts from the rack. He lifts a lot of weight. He's a very strong dude. But what you'll notice is when he lifts it up from the rack, he's already created all this internal tension. You see him go, picks it up, takes two baby steps. There's very little rotation happening. And then he does his lifts from there. And then he leaves it on the floor and he deadlifts it up afterwards. So there's you can do it, but in my observation, if you're not really good at maintaining tension, then you add the rotation. Don't do it from the rack. If it's a deadlift, RDL, no problem. Okay, back to sets, RDL. So if we're doing an RDL, our objective is to get our bum as far away from the load as possible. So what we should see is the hips need to go in this direction as much as possible until they run out of room. And we shouldn't see continual movement through the spine. It should be the hips go back, hips go back, hips go back, until the hips can't go back any further. Hips go back, hips go back, hips go back, so they can't go any further. What happens sometimes is when we get sloppy and we get tired, the hips go back, they stop going back, and we just keep going with the upper body. The upper body continues to bend over. So if they're doing pretty good. Okay, there, that's the one. That's the one. This is super subtle. And again, because I watch a lot of deadlifts, watch when his hip stops going back and his torso continues to go down. So 52. Let's watch the rep before. So the rep before, hips go back, torso goes down, hit together, together, together. Oh, the back kept moving a little bit. And on this one, it's even more. Hips go back, hips go back, hips stop, and back keeps moving. Does everyone see that? Hips stop about there, and his torso continues to go down. There. I'm gonna rewind that one more time. Hips are going back. They stop about here, and then his torso continues to go. There. Seth, do you see what I see?
I did, yes.
Super subtle, but an RDL, what do we want to get out of an RDL? Glutes, hamstrings. The erectors, the back muscles, they are there just to support. They're not the main character of the movie. They're the best supporting actor. They have to create tension to lock our spine from moving. So the only way we move is through the hips. When the hips get tired, they ask the erectors to kick in. So if you had a series of, say, like low back pain, I would say we got to do reps until that's about to happen and stop just before. So I'll exaggerate. I'm going to show exactly what was happening there. So hips go back. They can't go back any further. Torso keeps going. Hips go back. They can't go any further. Torso keeps going. If the torso keeps going, the back does more work. So I'll get everyone to do this as a drill. There is a range of motion that everyone has. for their hips. And when you max out that range, that's your cue to come up. Not everyone should bring the bar below the knee. So I want everyone to stand up. And what you're going to do is you're going to place your hands on your thighs. You're going to tuck your pelvis underneath you, arch your pelvis, and then go to the in between. We call that neutral. So here, I'm in a neutral position. My hands are on my thighs. Very slowly, lead with your tailbone going back. So my hips are going back. My hips are going back. My hips are going back. I keep doing that until they can't go back any further. They can't go back, and that's it for me. My bum can no longer go farther. So once you've figured out what that range is, you should have a lot of tension on your hamstrings. We all got tension on our hamstrings. Now, squeeze your bum to come up. Return. Hips back, hips back, hips back, hamstring tension. Pause, maintain the tension, squeeze the glutes. Hips back, hips back, hips back. Now, keep reaching down, reach with your arms. Don't squeeze your glutes and stand up. You should have felt your erector muscles lifted you on that last rep. So it's subtle from person to person because some people will feel the tension in their hamstrings really soon, and some will feel it really late. The key thing is when the hips can no longer move back any further, that's your range of motion. If you lift with big plates and you've got long ass arms, you're probably gonna touch the floor before you max out your hip position if you're also optimally tall. Do we all know what optimally tall is? Optimally tall is 174 centimeters, just so we're all clear on that. When you look at super centenarians, people live to be 120 years old, the men, the ones that live the longest, 174 centimeters. That's optimal tall.
Does that happen to be your height, Chris?
You know what? God can't make everyone perfect, but he threw me something. He didn't throw me hair, but he made me 174, so I'll take it. But if it's like, and if I do an RDL and my arms are kind of long for my body size and I have a short torso, if I do an RDL, I don't use 45s because the plates will touch the floor before I've maxed out my range of motion. So I will use 35s or 25s, or I'll stand on a 45-pound plate, or I'll just take my grip and make it a little bit wider. That's how I'll do an RDL. So if you find that you make contact with the floor too soon and you still have more hip to use, then make that adjustment there. So Seth, do you see what we saw or what I saw?
I do, yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. And it's subtle. And I look for it as the reps go on. Because if I only watched reps 1 to 3, I'd be like, man, you RDL perfect. You're good to go. And if you then said, well, why does my back hurt when I do RDLs? Well, your back didn't do anything on reps 1 to 3. It was the reps went on. So when fatigue accumulates, the body does things to make it easier. Question. So some of you guys might have seen videos by Ben, and we may have put them in there with the coaching videos to elevate the toes when you do an RDL. That's also for people who can't find the tension in their hamstrings. So if you elevate the toe, it amplifies the neural tension because it does this kind of pull on the back, and or you can create that tension without going all the way to the floor. I would concentrate on getting my knees back sooner, John. Okay, so what about foot position on the RDLs? So John, foot position on the RDLs, a general heel toe in a straight line tends to be more optimal. The more the foot tends to turn out on a very subpar level, your adductors or inner thigh muscles tend to contract a bit more. But like I'll give sumo RDLs or sumo good mornings to people who want to develop or utilize their glutes more where they can feel it more. But the juice ain't really worth the squeeze to be playing with foots out, foot in so much. So I just say straight on. Can you feel your hams and can you use your glute to get up? If someone says yes, we're good. If not, I say turn your toes out just a little bit. They turn them out a bit and they say, I feel them more. I'm like, great, I'm happy with that. There you can feel it. Okay, so we only looked at four deadlifts today, but of those four deadlifts, those were kind of the things that I saw that would change the exercise. It can make the exercise more efficient for the objective of the person lifting it. It can make it safer and can usually allow you to lift a little bit more weight. We got a
If
few
you
more.
could,
Pardon me?
Jack, this is one. I popped one in as well, a bit, just one up, and I had one in lifting shoes and one in socks with
Yes.
RDLs as well. If you got a couple of seconds,
Yeah, I remember seeing that prior.
it's
That's
my
good.
newborn giraffe video. It's up.
Well, you were in the first ones. There we go.
Yeah, I'm in Australia, so I can live in the future and send you things ahead of time.
Okay, so we'll go back to the start here. So the shoes are socks. That's perfect. So the other one, you were in the lifting shoe. So the lifting shoe takes your center of mass, pushes it a bit more forward, and we don't want that. So the lifting shoe is not ideal, and you're not optimally tall. You're early death tall. So because you're early death tall, your range of motion is quite large on a deadlift. So I suggest you definitely don't wear anything under your feet to make you taller. If you want to lift the most weight possible, sock feet, that's your best friend. Your setup position, when you go to lift the weight, I'm looking for ripples in the shirt. So I'm going to go just before the plates come off the floor. So there, I see a little ripple in the shirt. The back is flat, it's not curved. A little ripple in the shirt, I'm happy with that. Now, what we'll notice is your back position is more, you guys want to see me. Your back position is more flat than some of the other videos. The reason for that is because of your height. You have to go to this position to lift that bar. So right away, when you deadlift, Rob, your erectors have to do more work. That's just it. But do they have to do more work, and do you have to deadlift from that position? Ooh, that's an interesting question. The plates that we lift in the gym, it's the same size for everyone, but not everyone is the same size. So when you put a barbell through it and you go to pick it up, that barbell is about 16 to 18 inches off the floor. If you go to pick it up and your spine is flat like this, but it's straight, you're okay, but you have to use your back muscles more to lift that bar. So I can develop your erector muscles as long as I pick the right weight. I can get you some really jacked, strong erector muscles by doing a conventional deadlift. I could, if you said to me, listen, Chris, when I deadlift from the floor, my back doesn't like it over time, but I can deadlift from the rack. I can do rack pulls all day and it feels really good. What I would do is I would actually bring the height of the bar up for you. I would have your deadlift off like risers or blocks or something, so that your back position is a little bit more like this. Sometimes rack pulls, depending on what gym you're at, you can do that. But if I go and do a rack pull, my starting height, the lowest height of a rack pull is the bar pretty much at my knee. So I'm kind of mostly just doing shrugs and lockouts. Like it's too high for my optimal height. So a rack pull might work for you, Rob. It wouldn't work for my body type. If I'm coaching you and you said your back bugged you on deadlifts from the floor, I would just bring you up a little higher. Put 245s on the floor and deadlift from there. So that'd be a height thing and then also a preference, how your body feels. But let's say you bend over there and you're like, oh, my back feels fine when I deadlift. Okay, we're good. So now when we look at the entire lift, oh, we're doing RDLs for you. Okay. You're doing RDLs with pause. So for you can see your hips go back and then they start. It's the same thing. So if you're doing an RDL, Rob, you would stop with your torso up a little more. So let's watch this video here. Watch the hips go back. They're going back there. They stop and then the torso keeps going. So your erectors are starting the exercise and then your glutes are kicking in. So erectors, glutes. I would actually say to you, I'd cue you when you do your RDL, stop the bar at the height of the knee because you're going below the knee, right? So I would say stop at the height of the knee because I want you, if I want you to use your glutes and your hamstrings. If you said, I need to develop my erector muscles. They're weak. I want to train them more. You got 10 kilos on a side. That seems like an extremely light weight for you. We can train the erectors with the right weight. That's the right weight for the erectors. If I put on 225 kilo plates per side and you were doing that same exercise with that range, you'd probably be like, bud, my spine is lighting up. So I would just choose the right weight for the exercise. Was your 1-inch shoes, is that conventional or RDL as well?
IELTS as well.
So we'll pass on that one there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so your RDL, that's the same thing. You don't have to go as low. And you have to consciously squeeze the glute to come up. Because that last rep we all practiced, when everybody did not squeeze the glute, we still stood up. But if you don't squeeze it, like sometimes as coaches, we can't see it. You should feel your arse pulling you up. If you feel your back or erector muscles pulling you up, you're either not squeezing your glutes or the weight exceeds your capacity. You can't lift that much weight for that many reps or for that single, whatever it is. So you got to choose the right weight where you can continually use your glutes. Does that make sense to everyone? Okay, it's just after 7. I'll open up the floor to one more question. I've got a couple minutes here before I got to take my kids to karate. So if anybody has a question.
Nobody wants to get in the way of the dojo.
Okay, fine. So just to summarize here, when we do deadlifts, choose a minimalist shoe to sock first. Keep the bar close to the body from start to finish. Look for ripples in the shirt. Don't flex the spine. Don't hyperextend the spine. Use your bum to finish your lift. Use your bum when you do your RDLs. When you do your RDLs, your range of motion should be how far can your hip go back, not how far your torso can go forward. So if you remember one of the things that I just mentioned, you're at least that much better for coming on the call than not at all. If you remembered more, bonus. So thanks a lot, guys, for coming in. If you have any questions regarding this stuff, message me on the channel, send a video over, and I can give you some feedback on that as well. And I will see everyone at the start of next month because I do these calls at the first Wednesday every month.
Cheers. Thank you.
Awesome session. Thank you.
Good stuff. Have a good one. See you, fellas.